Well, the college basketball season is over, but this year's NCAA tournament, specifically the Final Four games, are far from being out of our thoughts and conversations. Here to recap it all is one of the best in the business, Clark Kellogg. Clark, how you doing?
I'm good, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. And first, we got to go straight to the Duke-Butler game. And, you know, what were you thinking, you know, that last minute and a half, specifically when Gordon Hayward's last-second shot is in the air?
Well, you know what? He had two really good looks. Actually, the first shot prior to the half-court heave at the buzzer, I thought was down. The baseline turnaround fadeaway jumper that he shot, actually was kind of a fadeaway jump shot on the baseline. I thought that was on. It actually was online and looked like it had a chance to go in, just was a tad long. And then after the missed free throw by Zubek, he gets the rebound. And I tell you, he took that shot right in front of me and Jim Nance's broadcast position, Jim, and it looked like it was going down. I mean, another 2 inches lower, and that ball's in the basket for one of the most dramatic finishes in any sport, had that ball gone in.
And, you know, talk about the two games there on Saturday and, you know, very dramatic game also with West Virginia there.
Yeah, you know what? When you consider the whole weekend, obviously the championship game was heart-pounding and exhilarating and close throughout. Neither team could really establish a significant cushion, and then it comes down to a last-second shot that almost goes in. The Michigan State-Butler game was one that was very similar in that both teams struggled at times to score. It was never really outside of a 4 or 5 point differential either way, and ended up coming down to some made free throws and a last-second defensive stop. So the whole weekend, at least those two games, really taxed everybody in terms of drama and excitement and heart-thumping. And I was drained after both of them, quite honestly, Jim, particularly that championship game. Duke was very impressive against West Virginia in the semifinals. They shot the ball extremely well. West Virginia really had no answer for Duke on the backboards or Kyle Singler and Nolan Smith and Shire on the perimeter. And I thought Duke won that one fairly easily and comfortably just because they were so efficient offensively.
Now, you've been around basketball for a long, long time, and is this one of the best Final Fours you've ever seen?
It certainly was up there. I mean, I've only been at CBS full-time since 1997, and this was only the second time that I had actually called the Final Four. I did so in 2009 and then this year as well. But I've been around the Final Four as a studio analyst since 1997. And clearly this was one of the more exciting ones. And I think the storylines going in with Butler being a team outside of the Power Six conferences, with Duke regaining its position at the top of the college basketball landscape after really being good but not being in a Final Four in a number of years. So I think all of that and the fact that it was in Indianapolis where Butler's home is, Lucas Oil Stadium, a phenomenal venue, all of that, I think. And the way the tournament unfolded prior to the Final Four with surprises and upsets and close games and buzzer beaters. I mean, it had everything that we've come to love and enjoy about the tournament. And then it culminated with a terrific story and a championship game that was as good as we've had in terms of competitiveness and drama and excitement.
Now, how about Brad Stevens? Obviously, he's young and a great coach. Were you at all surprised to hear that he signed a 12-year contract with Butler?
You know what? I really wasn't, Jim, having spent some time with Brad. He was an assistant coach at Butler just a few years ago, and the Butler basketball family recruited one of our boys, our oldest son, Alex, and we spent a decent amount of time with Brad Stevens as we looked at Butler really closely and came over to Indianapolis, and I was extremely impressed with him during that time. He was diligent. He was bright. He was personable. He was etched. He was anchored in a philosophy of team and how to succeed and how to help young men develop on and off the court. So, no, I was not surprised. It seems like a terrific fit for now. You never can really know what the future holds, but clearly it seems to be a really good fit for Butler and Brad Stevens and vice versa. So I was not surprised to see him. He's an Indiana kid. He's an Indiana guy. So, no, I was not surprised to see him lock down and stay.
Now, Clark, if West Virginia is completely healthy throughout the tournament and Michigan State is completely healthy and Robbie Hummel doesn't tear his ACL, you know, what kind of Final Four do we have and what kind of champion?
Well, you know what? I can never actually determine what that would be because it's an unknown. You know, sometimes those kind of unfortunate circumstances lend itself to what we saw. And if everybody had been healthy and everybody was available, then we may not have had what we had. I mean, I always try to deal with the reality of what we have in front of us. It doesn't do us much good other than for just sake of conversation to try to speculate as to what it could have been. And I'm rejoicing in what it was.
Absolutely.
I feel bad for those kids that weren't able to participate. Hopefully all will be healthy and able to go full bore next year. But for what we had at the end of 2010, I don't know if we could really top it.
Now, it didn't take long once the college basketball season wrapped up. Now we have some names that are being thrown around to possibly enter the NBA draft. Those five guys from Kentucky, Juwan Johnson and Etwan Moore. You know, these are, and Gordon Hayward's even talking about it, and Evan Turner from Ohio State.
Yep.
I mean, these are going to be huge holes to fill if they happen to go on to the NBA.
Oh, without question. But that's the landscape that we live in college basketball now, Jim, because players are actually required to be 19 and 1 year out of high school before they become NBA draft eligible, you'll have a number of kids that may have not chosen college out of high school if they didn't have to. Some of the names you mentioned, I think those are kids that were going to be in college, a kid like Gordon Hayward, Evan Turner. They've developed to a point where now they have a chance to realize their dream of being NBA players. It just so happens that their opportunity is coming prior to their eligibility being up.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, it's always, in my mind, a personal call, a very personal decision for any player that desires to be a pro, that has the ability to pursue that as a way of making a living. Then you have to determine with those you're close to when is the best time and the most ideal time for you to launch yourself towards that dream. So it clearly will create some holes for those who do decide to leave. And yet we know college basketball continues to be college basketball. Whatever you say about the warts in the game, there are always going to be good players that show up on campuses and that compete in Division I basketball.
And what are your thoughts on extending the tournament to 96 teams?
You know what? I was initially opposed to it, Jim, because it seemed as though there was no need to modify it or tweak it because it was a pretty good formula, extremely popular and successful. It seemed to be a nice three-week run. And yet, after hearing some of the reasons for considering expansion, I'm open to what that might mean. I'm not sure exactly what it looks like in terms of how it impacts the regular season, what it does to conference tournaments. I've not given that a lot of thought. But in general, just being more, I'm more open to the idea of expansion. Change is inevitable, and change doesn't necessarily have to be bad. So I'm open, and it looks like that's where we're headed. And until we get there for sure and officially, I'm just going to wait and let the chips fall where they will, and then if we do go to 96, we begin to evaluate it and see how it unfolds going forward.
Now, real fast before we wrap things up here, your thoughts on the Indiana Pacers? I know you do some color.
Yep.
for FSN.
Yeah, well, actually, it was a disappointing and difficult year when you consider the number of injuries the Pacers had to work through. Clearly, everybody's disappointed. Anybody associated with the organization, the fan base, president, general manager, ownership, players all across the line, disappointed about not being able to participate in the playoffs for the fourth consecutive year. Yet, there is a plan in place to continue to try to build, and now you look forward to trying to get injured players healthy. Mike Dunleavy to have a good offseason. Tyler Hansbrough hopefully to be able to come back at full strength for training camp. You've got a draft choice that most likely is going to be somewhere between, well, it will be between 10 and 1, depending on what happens in the lottery. You have a chance to fortify your team that way. So I think that's what you look at, trying to improve and staying on course with a plan to be a playoff team next year, and you hope that you don't have the injuries that were part of what led to a tough and frustrating season this season.
Clark, thanks for sitting down with us and talking a little basketball today.
My pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me on. We can do it again maybe next basketball season, maybe once or twice more.
Hey, I'm all for it.
All right. Well, you've got my contact info, so we'll make it happen next season as well.
All righty. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thanks again, Clark, for sitting down with us today. And email me at jim@johnsonmediapbm.com and follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JJSportsFreak.